Welcome to EAA Radio. If you're just tuning in, this is Attitude Adjustment. I am Magneto Mel, sitting here with Amy Laboda, and we have yet another lovely guest with us today. And Abingdon Welch is a ferry pilot, but also you may know her as Juice on Flying Wild Alaska, and a few different hats or shirts and whatnot that she wears. She's done quite a lot, but recently you've been ferrying light general aviation aircraft to new owners over in Asia, China and Korea specifically. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. This year, I have taken, I took a Cirrus SR-20 to South Korea. I took a Bonanza and a Baron to Shanghai, China, and Taiwan. I've taken two King Airs and a Caravan to Hawaii. And I actually have about five Cirrus SR-20s that are leaving on Sunday. We're looking for pilots. And if anybody wants to trek over to South Korea again. And I'm flying the heck out of the ocean today. Or not this year.
And how is that ocean flying? I mean, is that something that you've done a lot of, or is this fairly new?
This has been the most I've been doing in a long time. I've been doing it now for a couple of years, but most of the ferrying I've done is over land. And this year I really started to enhance my ocean crossing experiences, which I love. I just absolutely, maybe it's crazy, but I love sitting in an airplane for 16 hours and managing the systems and overstressing the airplane and then handling it. That's the complication of ferry flying. You're operating at 130% over gross. You've got external fuel systems that are sitting right next to you in the co-pilot seat. And you have HF radios.
And you end up flying on those auxiliary tanks for a good portion.
A good chunk of it.
It's not just a backup system.
No. You definitely need to use the fuel in that tank. So, and sometimes you lose communications with the radios and you're kind of by yourself for maybe an hour or two. And it's like, okay, let's work around this. Am I navigating correctly? Are the winds pushing me? What's that weather system out there? You know, all that kind of stuff. So it's incredibly, incredibly difficult flying, but it's amazing. I wouldn't want to do any other kind.
And now you've had some experience with somewhat featureless terrain when you were in Alaska. Were there some periods where...
Well, in Alaska, I didn't really do any featureless terrain flying, the night flying a little bit, but when I was training aerial, it's all VFR, it's all private pilot stuff, so we had to maintain, you know, visual conditions. We had to see all the time. So I never really did anything hard IFR, and also during the time I was there, when you are flying in IFR systems, it's you don't want to be flying. It's too much icing. It's just a lot of terrain that you got to worry about. So I kept all my flying pretty visual when I was in Alaska, which was beautiful because I got to see it all.
Sounds like a smart lady to me. Now, listen, my question is, how in the world did you get involved in the first place in Pacific overwater deliveries? I mean, what was the first thing that clicked in, and do you have to take special classes, or is it one of these deals where they give you the training and they throw you in the cockpit and you're out of there?
There are some operations that do it that way, which
Yikes.
I would heavily argue against. Don't work for those folks. But for me, it's actually kind of a funny story. I just told people I was a ferry pilot, and I'd never done a ferry in my life, but I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I had delivered some airplanes for Cirrus when I worked for them as a demo pilot and a delivery pilot, but that was just kind of across a few states. So it wasn't anything really big, but I do kind of longer cross countries. And I started telling people I was a ferry pilot. And then one day somebody said, oh, well, I've got a King Air that's going to Japan. And I was maybe a total of like 700 or 800 hours, and I'd never flown a King Air in my life. And so what would any smart pilot say? I'm busy. I'm doing something else. So I didn't take that. I'd never done an ocean crossing before either, so I didn't take that flight. But the next one that was offered to me was a Tomahawk going down to Guadalajara. And I'd flown in Mexico before. So I did a little bit of a checkout in a Tomahawk, which was a very simple airplane to fly. And then I took 3 days. It was VFR only because the airplane wasn't equipped with any IFR. And that's how I got my first international ferry.
And now, how is that flying internationally? Because general aviation, as it were, as well, and a lot of these places probably don't hear from a lot of women pilots.
No, I am an anomaly out in the international world. But people do remember me. So when I land back in like little Micronesia or Kiribati or some of these places out in the Pacific Ocean, they're like, oh, yeah, we remember you from months ago. Oh, how are you? And da-da-da. So you definitely get remembered, and you do get treated a little differently being from the U.S., all in positive ways. You know, they want to know what the U.S. is doing, and they want to – a lot of the – islands out in the Pacific are U.S. territories, so they have a huge, or they get U.S. relief aid. So you have a huge U.S. Inspiration there. There's a lot of admiration for the U.S. in the Pacific. So I've landed at Tarawa Island, where there's, you know, some very big history from World War II, and there's a big battle between the Marines there, the U.S. Marines and the Japanese. And I've landed in some incredible, incredible places. And being a woman has been really, really rewarding. In Mexico, I learned what sola meant, because every time I landed, they would say it's sola. And it turns out it means, are you solo? Are you by yourself? And they were looking for another pilot. And then, yeah.
Or a pilot.
Well,
someone else to get out.
Someone else. They were looking around. I'm like, I'm in a Tomahawk. This thing is tiny. There's nobody else here. And yeah, the fuel sometimes can be a little tricky to find. It might not always be the best quality, so you really want to make sure you're sumping really well and just getting all that kind of stuff out. And it's a lot slower. Everything's done a little bit slower. So,
Are you finding any other women in some of these countries or girls that notice you? I don't know if they're around the field, or is it helping to inspire? You know, they say you get a little break from being, you know, from the U.S. But.
Sure. In fact, in the EAA Sport Aviation magazine this month, this edition, they did a story on the Bonanza and Baron that was taken over to China. And
it's quite a spread.
It's a beautiful story by Mark Phelps. I didn't expect such a big story about it. But on the trip I did before to South Korea, when I delivered that Cirrus, the welcoming party was about 40 Koreans lined up in a row watching me taxi towards them. It was amazing. They all had their cameras out taking photos of me. And then I'm like, I got to get cameras, pictures of this. So I'm taking photos of them. But when I stepped out of the airplane, they weren't expecting a girl. And my contact there was one of the women who spoke very good English. She's one of the higher ups in the company. And so she took me out the following day, took me to dinner, took me just all around Korea, kind of showed me around. And she's like, you know, I have a confession. I cried last night on the day you flew in. And I said, what do you mean? Why? And she said, well, I have about, you know, a couple hundred hours of flying, and I stopped. But when I saw you get out of the airplane, I thought, I need to go back and do this again. And she got so emotional about it that she actually cried. And I was just stunned, absolutely stunned. You know, we kind of take it for granted that we fly airplanes all the time.
Yes.
And we don't realize sometimes the influence that we have on other people. And it was wonderful. So her and I are good friends now.
Yeah, or the privileges that we get to enjoy here. I mean, it's a privilege for everyone, but we take for granted how, even with our barriers or being, you know, only 5-6% of the population, mm-hmm. it's still a phenomenal difference from what other countries have.
The pilot population.
Yes.
Yeah.
Turns out we're actually a majority.
Yeah, we are. Everything is about pilots here.
So, Abingdon, where can people find you here on the field and also on the web? You've got a lot of things going on.
I was going to say, that's yet another hat
just,
she wears.
It's not just ferrying. You're actually an entrepreneur.
I am an entrepreneur. I spin a lot of plates in my life. Here at the show, I kind of have established in one place. I'm in B Hangar, the best hangar, aisle A for Abingdon. That's where you'll find me. I'm with the watch company that I started back in 2006 when I was flight training and looking for a pilot's watch for women. So we offer the only pilot's watches for women. We have a new line. The Catherine model is going to be coming out, which has patent pending equipment on it, which if you come by, I'll give you a good demo on it. It will help you remember ATIS forever. So because we've never forgotten ATIS in an airplane, right? We always write down the letter. We always remember it. Yeah, right. So,
and where can people find you if they're not here at the show? How can they look up more stuff other than the EAA Sport Aviation article?
The article. The other place you can look is at www.theabingdonco.com. And that's Tango Hotel Echo Alpha Bravo India November Golf Delta Oscar November Charlie Oscar. .com.
She says that so well. You can tell. She's been working on that. That's terrific. TheAbingtonCo.com.
You got it.
Well, excellent. And if you want to hire her to move metal for you,
call me up.
Call her.
Now she really is a fairy pilot.
That's exactly
I'm not faking
right.
it anymore.
Well, we have been speaking with Abingdon Welch of the Abingdon Co. and a fairy pilot, and you are listening to EAA Radio, the voice of EAA. We'll be right back with more Attitude Adjustment.